Welcome to Alaska Edition, a weekly public affairs program produced by Alaska Public Media in the studios of KAKM. The host and moderator for Alaska Edition is Lori Townsend.
Hello, thanks for joining us. My guest today is Alaska's Attorney General, Michael Garrity. Mr. Garrity has been practicing law for more than three decades and has been the state's top attorney since 2012. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me, Lori.
We're going to be talking about rural justice. As you know, the state's law department deals with a wide range of legal matters. But today I want to focus on tribal courts and what the future may look like for court proceedings in rural Alaska. There's been stories in the news quite a bit recently. Earlier this week, the Senate Indian Affairs Committee reviewed the Indian Law and Order Commission report. It paints a fairly bleak picture for Native communities, saying the high rate of crime in Native communities is a national disgrace and a national problem. It calls for more authority for tribal justice systems, saying in part the state and federal government should strengthen rather than degrade tribal sovereignty. The report said that excluding Alaska tribes from the Violence Against Women Act was unconscionable. The state lobbied for that exemption. Why was that?
Well, because on a fundamental level, Alaska's tribes are not like tribes in the lower 48. What the VAWA reauthorization did was to authorize tribes in matters arising in Indian country to issue protective orders and to prosecute crimes against non-members for domestic violence offenses. And we all agree that's a serious offense. But we don't have Indian country in Alaska with the exception of Metlakatla. So there's a fundamental difference between the two types of tribal systems. And the exemption, and whenever there's an issue dealing with tribal law, we always seek to clarify Alaska's different status, and so the exemption in question clarified that the VAWA reauthorization did not expand or retract tribal jurisdiction in Alaska. So it was no attempt to take away what tribal courts in Alaska were already doing, but in terms of confusion or creating an opening, if you will, for a different interpretation about Alaska tribes, we sought that exemption. So it's not that we care any less about domestic violence or anything else, but it's simply a jurisdictional issue, and it's an important one for the state.
The report says Congress should recognize and expand Indian country in Alaska, as this is a legal term. It's not just a phrase. Indian country is a legal term. And that it should be supported and have tribal concurrent jurisdiction with the state. If Congress were to do something like this, what would that mean for the state's legal system?
Well, the ramifications would be immense. I mean, there are 229 federally recognized tribes in Alaska. I mean, the vast majority of federally recognized tribes are in Alaska. Not all of them are as active as some others, and there's some variation there, but creating Indian country for each one of those tribes would create a patchwork quilt of jurisdiction across the state of Alaska. I mean, right now we have a centralized government and enforcement and judicial system and so on. And I'm not sure how it's a positive move to create this patchwork quilt and to create Indian country across the state. These little enclaves of authority that could pass their own laws, have their own system of justice, and the lands in Indian country cannot be taxed. What about fish and game laws? What about zoning? What about environmental issues and so on? I mean, there's just a whole host of questions that are opened up. So I do agree that the state should be looking for ways to try to collaborate with tribal courts and tribes and trying to deal with issues of public safety in their communities. I agree with that goal. But in terms of using a mechanism of creating Indian country and turning back the clock on ANSC, if you will, I don't believe the state is in favor of that.
It seems an unlikely proposition, but I think that people would have thought it was unlikely that 229 tribes would have gained federal recognition all in one order in the early 90s. Do you think that this could be a situation that Alaska may be facing at some point in the future, that there will, Congress will take up this issue of Indian country here?
I don't know. I hope not, but we can't obviously control what happens in Congress. I mean, there's not a lot happening in Congress, quite frankly, over many other important issues, but I don't know. I think, the Indian Law and Order Commission report, we obviously read. I took it to heart, but I didn't agree with all of it. I thought it understated to some extent the successes the state has had and the efforts that this administration has made under Governor Parnell to increase funding for VPSOs, for example, troopers, VPSO housing in the rural communities and so on. So, so there were aspects of the report I did not agree with, but there was a hearing about it this week, and there are other issues, of course, in the ILOC report besides Alaska, certainly, but in terms of there's aspects of the report we agree with them. I mean, they talked about deputizing tribal law enforcement members to enforce state laws. I mean, that's a concept I think could have some promise, and we in fact have been working with some tribal courts and tribal entities since before the ILOC report came out. The governor announced at AFN that he wanted to pursue some of these initiatives. So we'd started and embarked down that path before the ILOC report came out, and we're going to continue down that path.
I do want to talk a bit about the governor's comments at AFN and what that will look like going forward. But before we do that, I want to switch gears just a little bit. There was a Supreme Court decision, Alaska Supreme Court decision, criminal law or criminal rule 11 was amended by the Supreme Court to add the option of restorative justice programs. This will go into effect in April. What does this mean for tribal courts and for state courts if they are impacted by that?
Well, right now the court system has been working with some restorative justice concepts like circle sentencing is taking place in the 4th Judicial District, and our prosecutors participate in that. I'm all in favor of finding remedies that are going to be effective in handing down punishment and convincing people not to recidivize and recommit these crimes. So I think the notion is that by bringing an offender in front of a community-based panel, that there is a judge there and a prosecutor and a defense attorney, but involving the communities in the process, letting the offender hear the impact that he's had in the community, the negative impact, the shame of his family, and letting the victim speak and her family. I mean, I think it's a concept that has merit, and it's one that the Department of Law has been working with, in the 4th Judicial District in Fairbanks, we'd look to, I welcome the rule, and it's something we'd like to continue to work on. I think it has a promise.
Chief Justice Dana Fabe didn't include as many comments in her address this week to the legislature as she did last year about tribal courts, but she spoke about allowing more local jurisdiction in rural Alaska. Are her comments and her thoughts about rural justice, she clearly feels strongly about that, are they in harmony with the state's thoughts on these things, or are they somewhat at odds?
Well, the Chief Justice I have the highest regard for, and I know she feels passionately about it, and it's a different branch of government, so you have to look at it from a little bit different perspective, and I think it would be fair to say the executive branch is probably a little more cautious about going in that direction, but nonetheless, recognizes and agrees that there's a hope there, that can be achieved by working collaboratively with tribal courts. And so I've never discussed the issue at great length with the Chief Justice. I did hear her remarks last year, and I go to the State of the Judiciary address, I know she feels strongly about it, as do I. I mean, I'd like to find ways to work with tribes collaboratively, as I said, on the ground in these small communities to find ways to make their lives better and more effective. So, in that sense, I think we have the same goal. we might be a little more cautious in trying to get there, but nonetheless, we do want to get there.
As you mentioned earlier, Attorney General Garrity, Governor Parnell told delegates at the annual Alaska Federation of Natives Convention in Fairbanks last October that he is considering allowing some tribal courts to preside over domestic violence and alcohol-related crimes. Let's separate out these issues. Taking alcohol first, what would the state be comfortable with, or what are you seeing as the way forward in regards to local control and law enforcement and tribal courts dealing with alcohol problems?
Well, there's two agreements that the governor announced at AFN, and one deals with existing state law, which allows a second-class community and city, and many of these rural communities, ironically, are second-class cities, but it allows them to pass a law and basically make a decision to refer certain alcohol offenses to what they call a diversion panel, or divert them to a community-type panel for resolution. And that panel could include tribal elders and others and from the community. And again, the idea would be to deal with the offense on a culturally relevant basis. So that was one of the agreements that the governor announced, and you know, that MOU is, we're working on that now and trying to roll that out with some communities in Western Alaska. The other agreement the governor announced is a limited delegation agreement, which we have reached out to several tribes already in Southeast, and we've reached out to the Tanana Chiefs Conference, which I think has 24, 26 tribes within its region, and TCC is a very active supporter and advocate for its tribal courts. But the limited delegation agreement would deal with alcohol offenses and misdemeanors, domestic violence crimes, as you said. And again, what we're looking for is to get the community involved, get the community engaged, and at the same time bring offenders before the community panel or the tribal court to face justice and face the music, if you will, in their own community. Many times, you know, if these crimes were prosecuted under state law, they'd be it might be a court in Bethel or Dillingham or Barrow, Kotzebue, or something like that. So you, the idea is to try to do it in these local communities, and let them try to deal with it, and as I said, become engaged in their own, trying to enhance their own public safety.
How would that work in relation to both Native people who are not members of that particular tribe, and also non-Native members or community members, residents who live in these communities? This is the only legal system in that community. Would this idea expand to those residents as well?
It's based on the consent of the offender. So if the offender, whether a non-Native or a non-member of the tribe, agrees to have his case diverted to the tribal court for a civil remedy. We're talking misdemeanors, and these are not typically offenses that you'd be jailed for anyway. And if they consent to go before, then they would. It wouldn't matter if they were non-member or non-Native or anything. If they're a member in the community and they were caught doing something and one of these offenses that's covered by the agreement, they would go before the panel. And we'd hopefully encourage them to do that. I mean, that they, otherwise, under the state, of course, you'd have, it's a criminal offense. You could have end up with a criminal record depending on what the situation is. And so the tribal court, again, would implement their own remedies. It would be up to them. There's no, you know, we don't tell them how to do it or what to do, but there are limits, obviously. I mean, they don't have jails or prisons, so I mean, but again, these are not offenses that would typically be the case. But maybe chop wood for elders or something like that. That's, again, relevant, and it takes place in that community. So that's, in general terms, how the agreements would work with the tribes.
Are you currently working on some agreements through TCC and maybe other tribal courts in the state on these issues? I understand there may be also an agreement with St. Paul, the court in St. Paul.
We have reached out to several. I'm not sure about St. Paul, but we're We reached out to TCC, simply because we know they're an advocate, and we know they represent a number of tribal courts in their community. Eventually, we'll have to go directly to the tribal court. I mean, the agreement would be between the state and the specific tribal court. But TCC as an advocate speaks for, I think, effectively for a number of the tribal courts within its region. But at the end of the day, we have to go to each tribal court and negotiate with them and try to, you know, hammer out any disagreements we have. The agreement was sent to them actually last year, late last year, and we've had several meetings about it. We had a meeting yesterday. I'm encouraged by the progress, and we hope to get in a position to execute here very soon. But, you know, they have their own. We're not trying to ram anything down their throats. It's a negotiation, and they have their concerns. We want to try to address those, and we have our concerns, and they're, I think, sensitive to those as well. So we had a little break here over the holidays, but we're actively working with them. We've reached out to a couple of tribes in Southeast. We're waiting to hear back from them. The initial reaction has been positive. So there is an agreement. It is out there, and it's been revised, and it's undergoing negotiation. But I'm very encouraged by the progress and by what I've heard. So we're optimistic we'll be in a position to sign some very soon. And then we'll continue. I mean, again, I'm not going to, I don't know about St. Paul currently, but certainly anywhere where there's an active tribal court and people interested in taking this on, we want to engage those people.
Is there some kind of a deadline for this agreement, or is it just an ongoing kind of a fluid process at this point?
Well, it's a bit of a fluid process. The sooner the better. I mean, the governor's mentioned this at an event, I think, in October, and I think he, you know, we're with all deliberate speed, as they say, but we want to get it done. But there's no artificial deadline or anything like that. We just want to keep it going and not lose momentum.
One of the concerns that was raised by in response to the Indian Law and Order Commission report was a concern expressed through the governor's office of expanding tribal court authority and creating an alternative justice system. But wouldn't the tribal courts operate within the same laws that the state courts operate in? Could you explain what that concern is?
Well, you know, I'm not an expert in tribal courts in the lower 48. I mean, there's a, you know, a confluence of federal law and federal authority over certain crimes and state law and then Indian tribal code, or if you will. And so, I mean, that's one of the big areas of concern if the recommendation was adopted to go back to Indian country would be just that type of issue. I mean, I think right now what we're talking about are tribal courts enforcing state laws, but if you have Indian country, that's a little enclave that's under the sole sovereignty and jurisdiction of that tribe. And the interaction with state laws and so on, I mean, I think that's one of those issues that we're concerned about. You know, if they do adopt Indian country, would it be like Indian country in the lower 48 where some federal laws might apply? So again, it's this patchwork quilt, this confluence of federal, state, tribal law and so on that we just think it would be a step in the wrong direction.
Tribal legal experts say sovereignty is not tied to land, that it's authority over people. So taking that description of it, sovereignty would mean that they haven't given up anything, that they already have sovereignty, that's not diminished over their own people. How do you respond to that characterization of what sovereignty is?
Well, I think that's a position that's espoused by advocates for tribal courts. I don't think it stands up to scrutiny under federal law. I mean, I think that's more of an aspiration, if you will, than the reality. You think about it, how can you exercise criminal law jurisdiction, criminal law authority, without a land base, you know, an area that where you have that authority? And that simply doesn't exist in Alaska, and with the exception of Metlakatla, is one community, but So these, I don't agree with that, I guess. I understand that point of view, and I've heard that expressed before, but we don't, I don't accept it on behalf of the state, and I don't think at the end of the day it comports with federal law. They certainly do have a jurisdiction for, you know, the health and welfare of their members, and that was the case in the Alaska Supreme Court that was decided in 1999, John versus Baker, in which it was a child custody deal. So certainly, clearly they have tribal sovereignty and authority over some matters without that land base. One of them is child protection issues and the like. And so, and we work with the tribes on those issues. I mean, we've had ups and downs, but by and large, ICWA-related issues, Indian Child Welfare Act, and so on. I mean, we've been working with tribes for a long time on those orders helping tribes when they adjudicate matters of child custody and so on amongst their own members. So the extent of that authority, though, is still a question as well. And so there will, as I said, the tribal situation in Alaska is somewhat unique in our view because of ANSCA and the background there. And then but since the Alaska Supreme Court decision in John versus Baker in 1999, there's been an ongoing process of both sides, I think, adjusting to this reality and finding out where the lines are and where the lines will be drawn. And I think that will continue for some time, but I think it's necessary and there's nothing wrong with it.
For the sake of argument, what would happen if the state decided to create sort of a quasi-Indian country? Given the high rate of crime that we see in rural Alaska, it's a devastating problem for the state. What would happen if you created a sort of artificial boundary or border, 5-mile radius around a community and said, if you're within this area, you're under tribal jurisdiction. You're going to answer to the tribal courts. If you don't want to be subject to that legal jurisdiction, then behave yourself when you're in that area or you will. What would happen then? Why would that be a bad thing from the state's perspective?
Well, I think you have to recognize that the tribal courts are woefully under-supported by the federal government. And I've wrote actually to the chairman of the Indian Law and Order Commission and urged him in his testimony to advocate for more funding for federal courts. But, you know, there's a lot involved in law enforcement and prosecution. You have to have jails. You have to have police officers or some type of enforcement mechanism. You need to have courtrooms. I mean, there's a lot of things that go along with it that people may not appreciate or realize. So I don't think it would be fair, number one, to try to impose that authority on tribal courts. Make no mistake, it's the authority, it's a responsibility of the state to provide that law enforcement and prosecution and so on for all these communities, and we do. And it's a tremendous task, given the size of this state and the lack of infrastructure and a road system and so on. But as you know, the last 4 years, Governor Parnell has increased funding for VPSOs, troopers, courthouses, and the like by $44 million. So it's something that he takes very seriously, but it's a mammoth undertaking. And I think to say we're going to create an artificial a border or enclave, if you will, an equivalent of Indian country around these communities and let them take it over, and then that might be more effective. I don't think it would be. I think it's the challenges there are overwhelming, and they simply lack the resources. And again, those are the responsibility of the federal government.
As you mentioned, there's been increased funding for VPSOs in communities. There's also been a discussion about arming VPSOs. Currently, they aren't legally able to carry firearms. What are your thoughts about this idea? Should that happen?
Well, you know, the VPSOs are under the Department of Public Safety, and I defer to their views. I mean, I think when I met with the commission members in Anchorage, I mean, it was brought out to me, emphasized by a former tribal police officer, I made sense to me. I think I would defer to public safety in terms of the utility and the training and whatever else might be required of these individuals. But certainly they have a dangerous job. We've had tragedies in the last year or 18 months, including at least one death. And so I think it's a very legitimate subject. And there's a bill in front of the legislature right now. I no reason not to support it.
The Tanana Chiefs Conference information says that tribal courts in Interior have handled around 3,000 cases since the Indian Child Welfare Act was adopted in 1978. How does the legal system within the tribal courts, do they help the state system by saving money within state courts, or how does that work on balance?
Well, I don't know that it's not really a money issue. I don't think it's more of a jurisdictional issue in terms of respecting the tribal courts and the authority and the inherent authority they have over the health and welfare of their own members and children. And so we want to help support that. They find foster homes, for example, and for their own kids.
We're going to have to wrap up. I'm sorry, Attorney General Garrity, to cut you off. Thank you so much for being with us. Thanks for joining us for Alaska Edition. Michael Carey will be back next week.
If you have questions or comments about the program, you can email Alaska Edition at alaskapublic.org or write us at 3877 University Drive, Anchorage, Alaska, 99508. Alaska Edition is a production of KAKM. The opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests and do not necessarily represent those of KSKA, KAKM, the licensee, or their underwriters.